Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right. So our Pop Life Podcast today is January. I know, I'm wilding. February the 7th.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good lately. How's everybody doing? Oh.
Again, Jeffrey, it's not, never mind. I was going to say it's not a game, but I just give up on saying that. I'm good.
No, but it's just, you know, it's just a little game for me.
All right, man. I'm good.
Yeah? How you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. All is well. I had to do some shoveling. Nasty weather was out there today.
Yeah, it was disgusting. This morning, earlier this afternoon, was terrible.
Yeah, but now it's raining, so it's slushy here. How is it there, Sean?
It was, you saw the sheet of ice that was covering my driveway that I sent you guys. It's a little weird. Like I said before, we have a pretty high elevation where I live. So our weather can vary very drastically from like New York City, like really drastically. Right. So up here, you know, it's coming down pretty hard. You know, hopefully it doesn't freeze, but I think it's going to freeze tonight. So I laid salt down and all that stuff.
All right, damn. You was out there like working for real. Like you work for the city.
I was out there for like 2 hours.
Damn. Jeffrey, how you doing? I know you've had some things going on with your knee and you had to have an MRI.
My wheels ain't working. I mentioned last week. If I didn't, I have a self-diagnosed torn meniscus in my left knee. And I went and got an MRI done last night. So I thought I'd get the results today, but the MRI, I didn't know they do them that late. The MRI, it was almost 8 o'clock at night when I got it done.
Because you went to one of those places that's specifically just an imaging place, right?
Yeah, it was at the part of the hospital, but it was the MRI section. You know, so they do them, I guess, all day. And, you know, I know when I got up from that table, I definitely was like a little lightheaded. I don't know if that's the radiation. I felt like a little just like.
I mean, mostly because you're staying still.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, and you were laying
flat. And kind of in the dark, right?
Yeah.
I had my eyes closed, and they put the my headphones like we're at the airport. Because, you know, the MRI machine is really loud. They haven't fixed that part of the technology yet to make MRI machine quiet. It's like super loud. So they give you the joints for your ears and whatnot. But so I guess I get the results tomorrow, and then I got to go on a trip tomorrow for work. And then when I come back from the trip, I plan on, scheduling this out. It's outpatient surgery. So it apparently takes like 30 minutes total to do it. And then,
but what's your recovery time?
4 to 6 weeks. But they say, you know, I could walk on it. I'll be able to walk on it like that day. Like I don't have to wear like a boot or a brace or nothing. Nah, you could walk right away. But then I have to do like strengthening exercises, and I won't be able to run or anything like that, but I'll be able to walk immediately. So it's not the end of the world, which is why I'm kind of like, I know I've talked to several people now. Every time I mention it, somebody else says, I had that. Or somebody else had that. I guess it's more common than I thought, but a lot of people are telling me like they didn't do no surgery, or like my man came by the office yesterday. He said he waited like 5 months. I'm like, why? Like, why would you wait 5 months with all that pain? Like, I don't.
Yo, yeah, that's crazy, man. Do your surgery. And my advice to you is absolutely make sure you go to all your PT, man.
Yeah.
When I had that surgery on my bicep, it was really helpful. Even when you think, oh, I'm good. You know,
you ain't good.
Just go. Just do the PT. Any of you guys listeners, you guys that have a surgery, man, follow the doctor's orders, okay?
Yeah.
Don't be putting Grandma Bless Earls on your foot and thinking you good.
Right.
Yeah. I'm gonna dip in some Epsom salt and some maple syrup, and yeah. I'm gonna
put some Tiger Balm, and then wrap it in an Ace bandage.
Yeah. Just put some Vaseline on it. You'd be all right.
Niggas drinking 6-pack of ginger ale, talking about he'd be all right later.
I'll be good. Cause ginger ale make it feel better. So yeah, so that's what's going on. But yeah, I'll be fine. I posted a little picture last night because we give you scrubs because you can't be an MRI machine with anything metal. You know, and I have like, you know, metal on my, I had a zip up, whatever. So they gave me scrubs. I posted a picture yesterday just of me in the scrubs. I wasn't really tripping, but I realized like people were hitting me like, yo, you good? Like I was, you know, like
they thought you got to go through some
yeah, on the deathbed or something. I'm like, yeah, nigga, I was in the scrubs in the locker room. You know what I'm saying? But thank you for everybody who reached out. What I'm gonna start doing too is leading up to the Oscars, which I guess is what, like about a month away or so.
I don't even think it's that. We might be like 2 weeks out.
Oh, I thought they were in March. They're in February.
No, they're February.
Okay, so I've been jamming to watch the some of these nominated movies. So I won't be able to actually review all of them because we ain't got enough time for that. But so I talked about I, Tonya before. So this weekend I watched Lady Bird.
How was it?
Well,
really well reviewed.
Yeah, you know, it's very white. It's a very white movie. It's set in 2003. I can't remember how to pronounce old girl's name. She's an Irish girl, Sochi something, the girl that was in Brooklyn.
Okay.
I can't remember. She's a really good actress though. She's like, you would never know that she was Irish. Like, she got the American accent down pat. And it's about her. She's kind of a quirky character. Not weird, but just a little bit quirky. And she lives in Sacramento, and it's 2003, and she's in her senior high school, and it's kind of like some things that happened to her through her senior high school. Laurie Metcalf, who was in Roseanne, she plays her mom.
Okay.
And I think, I believe Laurie, I gotta look, but I thought, I can't, if Laurie Metcalf didn't get nominated, I'll be shocked because she killed that role. And if she did get nominated, I think she actually might win and beat out Old Girl from Otanya, from I, Tonya. But it wasn't a bad movie. It was just, it had some twists and turns. It was just kind of like a white coming of age movie, you know? But,
the name just really threw me off. I think we might have even talked about that.
Like, cause I thought it was about Lady Bird Johnson.
I thought it was a historical drama or something.
Me too. For like,
once I saw the reviews and saw how well everybody was talking about it, something about the title of it just kept me from really ever being like, oh, I really want to see that.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't make sense, but yeah.
No. I was with you. I thought it was about Lady Bird Johnson, like for a long time. I was like, oh, that girl playing Lady Bird Johnson. But then, you know, in the movie, I forget her name in the movie. Damn it. Kathleen or something like that. But she comes up with this other character. She's like, no, call me Lady Bird. That's where it comes from. You know, so it's this whole thing about her making people call her Lady Bird. And your boy's sister is in it. I didn't realize it was a sister until I looked up later. And she's really good. Jonah Hill.
Who's Jonah Hill's sister?
Jonah Hill's the guy from Superbad.
No, but who's his sister?
I don't know. She's like a young girl, something, because his real last name, I think it's like Goldstein or Weinstein, something like that. She uses her given name, but she plays the character in the movie. She's really good. Like, it was, I mean, you know what? It's one of the joints, like, I mean, bro, I wouldn't watch it. I'm not going to suggest it, but like, but for you, like, if it's a Sunday and you chilling or whatever, like, check it out. It's like, So next I'm going to watch Shape of Water, and so I will review that next week.
Oh, yeah, I'm trying to catch that.
Yeah, so I will review that next week.
Last one, oh, yeah, Johnny Hill's last name is Feldstein. His brother is a really popular, or maybe not popular, but he's a pretty well-known manager, actually.
Yeah, and his dad was an agent, I think.
Yeah, his dad was like a CIA agent.
Yeah, so he grew up, they grew up in the business, so... But yeah, but I mean, I suggest Lady Bird. Like, I give it like a 4 stars. You know what I'm saying? Like, it ain't like the, you know, the be all end all. But like I said, if it's a Sunday, you ain't doing nothing, and you know, you got the fire stick, then you know, then by all means, you know.
Right.
Also wanted to mention. I guess we could jump right into the Heat right away. Quincy Jones.
We gotta start with Quincy.
Yeah. We all know.
Yeah.
He's out here. We all know who he is. He's basically probably the most famous music producer ever.
Yes, and one of the most prolific producers ever.
Yes, he's done literally any type of. He's done classical. He's done jazz. He's done obviously R&B. He's done disco.
He's done big band.
Yeah, he's done scoring movies. He's like done. There's nothing TV jingles like. There's literally nothing he hasn't done. So he's the best. And now he's 84.
Out of fucks.
Yeah, out of fucks.
And didn't have a lot in the first place.
Yeah, he's from Chicago originally, and then left Chicago as a young man, probably, I guess, about 11 or 12, and with his mom and his brother, and moved to Seattle, which is wild, because Seattle, for black people, in the 40s, must have been bananas. Like, I don't even know how that even looked. And did his high school stuff there, and then left there and kind of hit the road, but I think with Count Basie was the first band that he latched on to.
I think he tried to go
17.
Because he tried to go at 14. He had a fake ID. Mm-hmm. But I think Basie's wife, whoever he was with, their wife was on to the fact that he wasn't old enough to be there. And they were like, you got to come back when you're of age. So, he's literally been out here for 6 decades doing this. That means, like, he's seen every evolution of music, every change in the business, worked with damn near every artist of note in 6 decades. That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, except from obviously Michael, Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald. I mean, just any big artist you can name, he probably took. Then obviously went into TV and he did The Wiz. He did music for The Wiz.
He did Color Purple.
So that was Oprah's first role. He was instrumental in getting her that role. I mean, just on and on and on. Like his career is retarded. I mean, I could kind of talk for hours just about his career, but that's not what this is about. So he's lately been doing press. He's never been press shy, but he's just kind of gone through phases where he'll talk to press and he'll go through phases where he won't. But the other thing about Quincy is, which is very interesting, is that even at this advanced age, he has always remained to kind of be obviously very well connected to the youth via his daughters and people around him. And he'd be like out, like he'll go out, like if you in LA.
Yeah, he was at the YouTube party.
Yeah, yes, I'm saying he's at the YouTube party last week. If you in LA and you go to like DJ Cassidy, does a lot. Quincy Jones goes to like pretty much all the DJ Cassidy parties in LA, like Mark Ronson parties. Like he's outside.
Quincy
like
goes to Mark Pitts's BT Awards party.
He's out here. Like he ain't out every night, of course, but like the right shit, he'll be posted up in the corner. And I've met him once or twice. I don't know him, but I met him once or twice. And the thing about him, he's wildly approachable. Like you can walk up to him, like, hey, what's up, Q? And he'll ask you, hey, bro, where you from, man? Oh, yeah, good nigga. Like, and you can start asking questions. Hey, man, what's up with that nigga, Michael? Hey, man, that nigga was crazy. Like, he'll just, like how he is talking in the article. That's really how he is. He don't like run away from no questions. Like, you run up on him, hey, yo, what's up with that Frank Sinatra shit, man? Yo, man, he'll just talk. Like, that's just who he is. So it's very interesting to see him do this in the press.
Right. Also, from everything I know, Q's never not been kind of like this. But also, at 85, with most of these mofos dead, it's kind of like, who going to check me, right? Like,
nobody.
Who going to run up on me because I'm talking?
And I ain't telling them but the truth.
Yeah, like, literally nobody.
Yeah, so, I ain't up here lying.
And it looks like he's setting up. Like, he turns 85 soon, and there's a documentary he has coming out that he's been working on with Oprah. Netflix. And I guess he's working on some other stuff, but
There's a special also that they're doing, I think, for CBS, they said, kind of honoring his life as well.
So I don't know if this is gearing up for that, or if this is just, I feel like talking, because I've been outside. Yeah. I really have no idea.
I don't either.
I think it's the former. I think people are coming to ask him these questions. And like Jeff said, he's never been shy about doing it, because these were pretty back-to-back interviews. It was like GQ and Vulture were like days apart.
Days apart,
It seemed to be strategic in terms of, handling him and the press. And listen, I'm sure Q is not doing a press day. And a press day, for those that don't know, is usually when you have a project coming out, you sort of dedicate a day to press. You might get a hotel suite. You have people come in. They do interviews, stuff. I mean, he's not doing that.
Yeah. So they kind of catch
him. Like one of them was at his house. One of them was at his
house. Both of them. Both of them
were at his house. Okay.
Yeah. I was going to say that's the interesting thing. Like he's inviting people to his Bel Air mansion and they're sitting in his crib and he's telling these stories like at his crib. It's like, wow, that's kind of. Yeah. So this Vulture article, which is what I'm gonna focus on, is amazing.
Like, well, let's back up the GQ
shit was amazing too.
Was amazing, but it's very it's a true long form piece, whereas the Vulture piece is Q&A.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more. Like my timeline all day has been Quincy Jones quotes and jokes.
He's still
like
trending number one, I believe, or two.
It's insane.
Yeah. So in this Vulture piece, we'll start off with Michael. He starts off talking to the interviewer, who I forget his name, starts off asking questions right off the bat about Michael Jackson. And Quincy, again, you know, doesn't hold back no punches. He says, you know, yeah, Mike was basically, as a businessman, was a greedy motherfucker. He wasn't giving nobody no publishing on the records. He was stealing ideas for songs left and right. He talked about a song that he wrote for Donna Summer called "State of Independence," and he was like, if you compare them note for note, that's where Michael got Billie Jean from. And
yep.
And then he talks about, you know, the guy asked him about Michael's plastic surgery, and Quincy says Quincy's the first one that I've seen with Michael's plastic surgery who said, like, yeah, I used to get at him all the time, and he was coming up with excuses. Most people kind of cover for Michael and be like, oh, no, he had vitiligo, and he only said he had one. Quincy was like, nah, nigga, like, you looking crazy.
Like, that was bullshit. Yeah.
That was bullshit. Like, he was just coming up with different excuses. And then he talks about, you know, the Michael being addicted to, what's it called, Propofol? Propofol, and that's what killed him. And, you know.
At the end, the guy was asking him first, what don't people know about Michael musically? And that's where he was talking about Michael being greedy and stealing shit. And then they were like, what doesn't Michael know? What don't people know about Michael personally? And that's when he was talking about the plastic surgery. But he was saying that at the end, all of Mike's behavior was about the drugs.
Yeah, Mike was a drug addict.
Yeah, but he was also saying, he was like, that's not unique to Michael. Like, that's anybody. And then he started talking about the opioid epidemic, which was like... Yeah. Amazing.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think in the tone I got from the Michael thing, which went into the rest of the article that the interviewer was thrown off, and most people probably will be thrown off too, is Michael, obviously such a revered artist, you know, the records he said and the music he made was amazing. It still lasts. That most people would have been like, Michael's just an amazing guy, man. And, you know, like, he was such a special guy. And then Quincy didn't come that way. Like, it was like, oh shit, okay, because you said he asked him, like, what was the most thing you didn't know? And most people were like, oh, that Michael was really shy and he was a prankster and he was so funny. And he's like, nah, the nigga was fucked up. Like, he was a greedy motherfucker, you know what I'm saying? And that kind of set the tone for the rest of
the whole thing. Well, the thing that's funny about Q's answers for everything is that none of them are really super in depth, but they're so blunt. That you're like, it's like three word answers, but in that three words, he'll say more than other people would have said, tap dancing around, you know, like whole paragraphs. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then it was
like, your man said he knew who killed Kennedy. Like, what?
Yeah. I was about to say he said he knew who killed Kennedy because Frank Sinatra told him. I heard that thing about the mafia anyway, but he basically confirmed it. But it was kind of like, there was so much in this article that part, I haven't heard nobody even talk about that part.
That was the part I posted. I saw it. No, I think I saw that part second, maybe, but not before I read it. But yeah, you're right. What eclipsed it was actually the stuff about, well, I'm sure you're going to get to Marlon Brando. That's what everybody's been kind of stuck on. But yeah, what's funny about that is that it's one of two times where Quincy himself brought something up. Cause the guy was like, what else? The guy was like, you seem to know a lot. And Quincy was like, I know too much. And he was like, what else do you know? And he was like, I know who killed JFK. And he was like, who? And he's like, whatever the mob's name is, through Frank.
Sam Giancana.
And then the guy asked him other questions and he was like, we shouldn't talk about this publicly. And he does it like two more times in the interview, which he brought up though.
It's
he bring it up and your man start asking more questions. Like the same thing with Cosby. He was like, what do you think about, like, he said something about Cosby. He mentioned Cosby's name and he was like, well, what do you think about Cosby? And he's like, we shouldn't talk about this publicly. And it's like, nigga, you brought it up.
And the other thing that the nigga would do that was hilarious, he'd be like, yeah, like, you know, so Sam Giancana, he killed Kennedy, man. Hey, man, what's your sign?
Yeah.
Hey,
wait, yeah, he's like, you shouldn't talk about this publicly. Where are you from?
Yeah, like, nigga, what?
If you've ever talked to an elder at church after
that's
service,
exactly what it is.
That's exactly how they talk. That's exactly how they talk. But nothing he said to me, especially about Michael, none of that was surprising.
Yeah.
Like, no, I wasn't, I don't know why people would have taken that as a surprise. Like, Mike was brutal in business. I don't think he made any bones about that. I mean, that was him and Paul McCartney's falling out, right? Like, when he,
bought his publishing.
Yeah, he bought the publishing. I mean, he's Joe's son.
Yeah. And the rumors have always been that, you know, that the motherfuckers was after him trying to kill him because they wanted that pub back.
Right.
Which actually I think has a lot of merit, but you know, we can't talk about that publicly. Bro, what did you want to mention the whole shit about the Beatles?
Well, I mean, I for a long time I had a certain level of validation that I felt proud of today with hearing reading Q shit on the Beatles a little bit. And I know it was a bit out of context, but I've always felt like the Beatles were just grossly overrated. And you know, I've been said this to you, bro. Them niggas couldn't hold nothing to Sugarfoot and Diamond.
More recent than them.
Verdeen. You know,
Verdeen. Can't nobody hold nothing to Verdeen.
You know, they couldn't hold them niggas' bags. Yeah. So it was a little bit of validation for me today.
Walkies.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, nigga, you ever see Stacks in them niggas play?
Yeah, I'm saying.
But I mean, I did get the context later on as I sort of, you know, read it and I got it. I mean, they were young in the context of what he was saying. So I kind of, you know, I got it. But he was also, for 85. And I mean, listen, I've been around old folks, especially old black men, and he's not lying at all. He's putting a little sauce on shit because that's kind of what we do.
Yeah, you know, a little flavor on top, little Larry's on it, you know,
yeah,
all right?
Yeah, he's putting a little on it. But he's incredibly, he's got, like, he's all there, man. Like, he's lucid. Like, he's really aware. Like, he's clear, dude. He's naming names. He's very, his answers don't, it doesn't feel like, and I'm assuming that it wasn't edited, but it doesn't feel like there were a lot of empty gaps of him trying to, you know, come up with an answer.
Yeah, these were rapid fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like somebody, you know, and well, Jeff, I'll let you talk about what he said about like Brando and them, which is what people were mostly reacting to today. Mm-hmm. But people were acting like Quincy had like was being intentionally salacious and trying to like slander motherfuckers' names and he bitter about Michael and that's why he said this and that. No. Like clearly Quincy wasn't giving any real thought to anything. He was just answering he was just talking. Yeah. Like none of this was yo, let me set some shit up. Like this nigga was just talking. And
I promise you, if we would have went to that YouTube party last week and sat down next to him and asked him same questions, he would have gave
the
same
answers.
Yeah, maybe even a little deeper
because it wasn't
not being recorded. But yeah, right. He would have. Yeah, it wasn't like oh, let me give this answer because I'm mad that I had to fight for my part of the Thriller out. Nah, that's him.
Right.
You know, yeah. This is him talking. Yeah. And he said, so the last part there's a lot of parts that kind of shook the trees, but he basically, you know, outed, I guess, for lack of a better term, Richard Pryor being a bisexual and Marvin Gaye being a bisexual. But again, it wasn't done out of malice. He was just like, hey, man, them niggas is crazy. You know what I'm saying? They was high and they was fucking. Marlon Brando, basically, as a young guy, and I mean, if anybody, obviously, Marlon Brando's not even alive anymore, but if anybody who just takes a look at some pictures of Marlon Brando as a younger man, he was fly. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was a really good looking guy. You know what I'm saying? And he apparently, you know, was doing his thing with whoever would allow him to do it. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, him and Richard hooked up apparently, and him and Marvin hooked up apparently, and I'm sure there's a bunch of other niggas that he didn't even mention. You know?
What was, again, I was surprised that people were surprised. Like, I really was.
I didn't know about Marvin Gaye being bisexual.
I do not think anything happened before 2000. I keep saying, literally, I was able to pull and post the clip of Richard Pryor himself saying he had sex with a man and like, and put it up. You know,
he's
it's not.
He's done that
it's
several
like,
times.
He's yeah, like he's done it. Times. So that also leads me to believe that you've never actually watched Richard Pryor stand up, which I wouldn't really be surprised. You might have seen clips of it and think you watched it. But like, if you really watch, if you actually, if you really know anything about A, the 70s, B, how really fucked up, and I'm not saying that you had to be fucked up to be gay, but I mean just how really fucked up and experimental and everything these guys were with the drugs they were doing.
Yeah.
And also just, like I said, the 70s, it was anything goes. Like I said this on Twitter, I was like, you can tell me any story about any celebrity in the 70s. I don't care how crazy it is. You can be like, this person killed this person, they threw the body in the canyon and they did this. No matter what you tell me, I'm gonna be like, I promise you, everybody knew that. Like, cause yeah. there were no secrets back then. At the most, there were open secrets. Nobody hid affairs. Nobody hid sex. Nobody hid drug use. Nobody hid abuse. Like it was all just whatever.
Marvin came from a super strict, repressive household.
Yeah.
He left Motown, which was also a very repressive space for him. Mm-hmm. After a certain point, he was over in Europe getting high 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Why is any of this shocking to anyone?
And it's a life of excess, right? So it's like you have two women. Okay, now I have a gang of women. Okay, now actually I want to try some other shit. You know what I mean? It's just like,
One up in each other.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, peace and love to Quincy Jones. I can't wait to host some more articles come out. I can't wait till this documentary
comes out. This documentary is going to be amazing. Yeah, I can't wait.
I'm assuming if he's talking like this in these articles, this is how he's going to be talking in the doc.
Well, somebody said that they read that he recently stopped drinking, so he feels lucid.
Huh? Yeah, he said that in
article. So he feels more lucid. Okay, I missed that part. But what I wanted to bring up was that in the GQ article, what I thought was fascinating is that they were talking about a couple, he said there were a couple times that Quincy should have lost his life. One was when he had an aneurysm back around maybe Thriller, somewhere in the 80s. Another was, he was supposed to be at the dinner, at one of the dinners that the Manson family came in and killed everybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was whose house was it? I can't remember the name of the woman.
Sharon Tate.
Sharon Tate's house, yes. He was supposed to be at Sharon Tate's house.
He was supposed to be at that dinner?
He was supposed to be at Sharon Tate's house. He was meeting somebody over there, and they were like, oh, yeah, meet me at Sharon's, whatever, whatever. And he said he literally just forgot about it, fell asleep, something. And then the next day, the person was like, yo, did you hear about whoever the person was that he was supposed to meet? I think his name was Jay or something. And he was like, he's dead. He was like, what are you talking about? I was just with him last night, and I was supposed to meet him at Sharon's. And he was like, yeah, like, everybody at the dinner got killed, and it was like the Manson family killing.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, which is insane.
Right.
See, it's a piece to him, man. I also want to just mention real quick, Jermaine Dupri was announced that he is going to be inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame this year.
Which we have questions about.
Yeah.
I mean, no shots to Jermaine, but...
Yeah, there's no shots to Jermaine because he's written some great records, you know, some big records with Mariah and obviously all the stuff he did with So So Def and, you know, right. Crisscross Jump and, you know, he's done his thing. It's not even about that. But, and just kind of looking at, you know, the Songwriters Hall of Fame website, it was very interesting. I mean, and not surprising, of course, because it never is that the further back you go into the Songwriters Hall of Fame website, because you can click on the link for every year, you know, all the inductees for each year going all the way back to the 1970 is when it starts. So it's pretty extensive. But you know, you click the links and it's only like usually like 6 to 7 people per class. So it's not a lot of people. So you kind of click the links to go backwards and you realize like how many, you know, the Songwriters Hall of Fame, like, well, bigger than that. It's kind of like, the music business, you know, I think it's changing a little bit now, but for many years up to fairly recently, it tended to mirror kind of like, whatever the guys who were the sick guys from the 60s, whoever they liked, like that's kind of who was down. So like Otis Redding and, you know, like Franklin and Ray Charles and like those guys that were like the guys that were like the young guys, the guys that were young in the '60s who were like writing for Rolling Stone and da, 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 da. Like those guys are now on the boards of a lot of these things. So like the black artists that get into a lot of these, that got into a lot of these kind of prestigious Songwriters Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, were like the black artists that they deemed acceptable.
Right.
You know, Lionel Richie, you know, Ozzy Holland, Dozier Holland. So, I mean, and, you know, these are amazing writers and artists. I'm talking about the writers now. These are amazing writers.
And all of everybody from Earth, Wind & Fire is in it, too, I think.
Yeah, I just saw Philip, but I would hope Maurice would be in there.
I read somewhere that all five of them are in there.
They should be, so I would hope so. I'm going to go with you, because if they're not, it's a fucking travesty.
Right.
Natalie
Cole is in there, which I was like, Patty. Patty LaBelle's in there.
As a songwriter?
Yeah, I need to double check that, but.
Yeah, double check that, because Patty didn't really write much.
That's why I was surprised.
Yeah, but my point to that is, so in reflecting that, what my stance, it shows, I think it shows clearly that my stance is correct, because last year's class, 2017, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, Jay-Z, Babyface, and Berry Gordy were in. Now, Hove, I kind of get being a 17, but how can Berry Gordy just be getting in 2017? Like, that's just dumb. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? But again, if you look back into like 1987, it's in all these kind of, you know, Paul McCartney, Carole Sager, again, and they deserve it. But I'm just like, you know, Berry Gordy's at the same level as Carole King, as far as I'm concerned, as far as the impact on music. So saying all that to say, for Jermaine to get in the class of 18 was very surprising to me, because there's so many writers that I would have put in before him. Jermaine. Yeah, like Teddy Riley, like LL Cool J.
Yeah, and also because I think Jermaine is a songwriter, but I also think of Jermaine as producer first and songwriter second.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there are a lot of just pure songwriters, you know, or like you said, if we're gonna do hip hop or hip hop soul, like like a LL or like shit, I don't know. You said Rodney Jerkins, like Dark Child definitely had Dark Child definitely had as many hits.
From Public Enemy. I mean, if you just talk about pure writing, I mean, he wrote all those records. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I mean,
Shit, G Sweat.
Yeah.
I know I'm exaggerating, but.
No, you're not. You're really not, though.
There's a lot of people that go in front of the line on JD. And that doesn't mean that JD don't get in the club. He's still getting in. But hold on, my nigga.
Yeah.
We got two coming in before you.
Yeah, we need Leon Silvers in here.
Let me say something. That to me is fascinating.
Leon Silvers,
my nigga, was like, because a lot of times I feel like with JD, what they take into consideration is they look at him as sort of a child prodigy, right? Because he was really doing these things at such a young age.
Yeah.
Right. But
yeah.
We forget, yo, fucking Leon was like 19 when he did a misdemeanor. He basically was Solar's in-house producer.
Yeah.
Solar had a fucking run that was unprecedented.
And he wrote pretty much all that shit.
He wrote all of that shit. There is no Shalimar, my nigga. That shit doesn't exist.
No
that
Whispers.
That sound. He reinvigorated the Whispers.
Yeah. So again, there's no shots at Jermaine. I mean, I know Jermaine a bit. He's a good dude. I got no, you know, I'm happy for him. I really am. But I was just kind of like, wow, okay, that's kind of interesting that you got in there before. Like, I mean, Teddy Riley, you got in before Ted. Like, oh wow, okay.
Yeah, the dude with two groups,
three groups. Rex and Effect. Don't forget Rex and Effect.
Yeah. And, you know, he did, you know, the Dangerous album with Michael and Bobby Brown. And I mean, the list is endless.
Dude, I'm just saying, like, even if you just went off that, my nigga, I mean, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And, you know, and so, you know, and what was also interesting now is that Babyface got in, but I don't think L.A. got in. Because he's not listed. It's only Babyface.
Yeah, which is interesting. You know, Face gets credit. a lot of songs that Face gets credit for were really L.A. and
well, the Face records, yeah.
Yeah, but I think maybe it was like L.A. was doing the music and Face was doing the lyrics.
Still
I don't
writing.
Know, but,
you're still writing.
Yeah, but it's still writing. But Babyface, listen, Babyface is prolific and amazing and he's great.
No, he's top five.
A lot of what he gets credit for was really him and L.A. together.
Yeah.
Like most of the 80s and at least early 90s stuff was him and L.A. together.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that L.A. didn't get in. So, you know, just wanted to kind of mention that. That was our little music business discussion for right now. Let's mention, let me take that sigh off it, you know, because, you know, it ain't right. Let's mention Kylie Jenner. She done had a little baby. I don't want to put no nastiness on it.
And announced it 2 hours before kickoff on Super Bowl Sunday.
And the story got swept away.
But then it came back.
Well, Chris watched it get swept away because, you know, she announced it 2 hours before, and then the Super Bowl started, and the Super Bowl turned out to be a great game that, you know, a lot of people watched and tweeted about. Then, of course, we had the halftime with Justin, which we'll talk about in a minute, and people were tweeting and talking about that as well. And it just became a whole thing, and the Super Bowl went down to the wire, and obviously Philly won it, and then the after thing with Kevin Hart. I mean, we'll get into all of that. So, like, Kylie's story was an afterthought. Like, she wasn't even trending at all. You know what I'm saying? So I'm sure Chris went into overdrive to bring it back up a little bit.
Which I'm also just like, what? Because, I mean, let's be honest. Kylie's message was like, oh, I didn't have anything time. There was no plan. But you don't just randomly, first of all, anybody who's big on social media doesn't just randomly drop something on a Sunday, period.
No.
It's not a day you do it. But on Super Bowl Sunday?
No.
Like, how'd you think?
Yeah,
unless Kylie was low key hoping for it to not get a lot of pick. Like, I can't figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't get like the timing, and like I was just like, oh, really? You're gonna do this 2 hours before the biggest, television show in the world, or one of the biggest television shows in the world? You're gonna do it 2 hours beforehand, and think people are gonna pay more attention to that than
the
game?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It maybe Kylie, considering she's been so low all this time, maybe she was actually trying to be anti, because you know how like celebrities might announce something scandalous like on a holiday or something in hopes that like press won't really pick it up or people won't really catch up on it. So maybe she was just trying to like put it out there but hope that like it wouldn't be a thing, because she's you know, she literally, we haven't seen her, I think the first picture of her even just came out last week of her
We didn't see her pregnant or anything.
She was like super low.
So let me ask this question before we jump into the next thing. I still have conspiracy theory that I need to see both these babies together. I need to see Chicago West, and
because you think she was a surrogate.
Yes, I think she was a surrogate, and that's why we ain't seen her.
But how's she gonna explain that she was a surrogate now that she announced that she has her own baby and named
I need to see both these babies together.
Okay.
I need to see them side by side to know that there's two.
With a newspaper
and
the date.
Yeah, because I ain't seen shit. I mean, I don't know. I just found it odd that as much publicity and press as the Jenners and the Kardashians love to get, and how it drives and fuels their whole empire, that Kylie, who was previous to this, I'm going to put air quotes up, pregnancy, was in front of the camera and on Instagram, you know, multiple times a day, it went from that to zero. It was just kind of like, what's really going on? I don't know.
Look, maybe it's the beginning of the chink in the armor for them as in terms of people really caring as much as they once did. I'm not saying that they're about to, you know, leave the pop culture world and, you know, just disappear, but I think, you know, people are kind of tired of them. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're a little tiring, man.
So who was, because I want to know, who was the surrogate for Kim then?
I don't think.
Why would we know that, though?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. You know, that girl can sell her story, too.
I know, but, like, why would, there's no way. You know, she probably signed all kinds of NDAs. Yeah, and also, right. if I was a surrogate for Kim and Kanye, I would want to guarantee that nobody knew I was a surrogate for Kim and Kanye. I don't want that life. Like, think about how people hassled that white lady who had a blanket and
Prince. Oh, Michael, what's her name? Debbie Rowe or whatever her name
is? Yeah, think about how they got at her, and that wasn't even the age of social media. I'm good. I don't need that.
Mm. I'm also, totally okay. Also, she might want to keep her motherfucking mouth shut because they might come and pay her again.
Right.
Yeah.
They might want another one. I think Kim already said she wants 4.
Oh, my God. All right, well, you know, look, peace to Kylie and Travis Scott. Hope y'all had a healthy child.
I mean, if I that guess.
Child is really y'all's.
you so old and black.
And you know, if that's even your baby, you even kin to the baby.
This nigga.
But Jeff, you're not even thinking long term. How would they play off the fact that there aren't two babies? That just, you're not even thinking about when the kids get older, when they go to school, when they grow up. Like, how would that work, Jeffrey?
I don't know, but goddamn it, don't feel right.
Jeff gonna say they went and took another baby. They went over to another country. They took that baby. That baby ain't got Travis' nose. I'm looking at this baby right here.
Nope.
The ears is light.
Yep. Ears light. Ain't turned dark yet. Shit. Nose.
So, you know.
they didn't squeeze that baby's nose to make it pointy.
Really. So, I don't really get into the whole Kardashian black man fetishization conversation, if I can help it, but it is really interesting at this point that, with the exception of Kourtney, all the Kardashian girls have biracial kids, and even Kris now is dating a black man. Like, it's just I don't know. This is very interesting to me.
Yeah, it's I don't know, but hey,
I'm just gonna call it interesting. I'm gonna leave it there.
Yeah, and I, you know, wish that baby well in its new life. God bless you, baby, for coming on to bless us with your presence. Nah, did you watch it? Did we read the story about the Doritos?
I read the headline. I didn't read the whole story, but basically that Doritos want to create a crunchless chip
for women,
which is like, what? I saw a lot of women be like, no, give us a bag that doesn't crinkle for moms so that them little bastards don't know we got food. Do that.
So the woman, there's a woman who is the head of PepsiCo named Indra, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, Noye. It's N-O-O-Y-E. She looks to be of Indian descent. But, you know, she's the head of PepsiCo. And she said it was basically her idea. Because she said that women didn't eat Doritos the same way as men did. She was on a podcast.
Because they're messy.
She said that they don't like to crunch too loudly in public, and they don't lick their fingers generously, and they don't like to pour the little broken pieces and the flavor into their mouths.
Right. They're messy. But here's the thing. If you take the crunch away, and if you take all the seasoning that you have to lick off your fingers away, they're not as good. I like the crunch. I like the crunch of Doritos. I like the crunch of crunchy Cheetos. I like the crunch of Pringles. And Pringles are like that too. Now they're thinner and they don't crunch the same way, and they don't have as much. Like, Doritos are messy. You can't just walk around anywhere eating them. But the women who don't eat Doritos in public probably don't eat any real chips in public. They're probably eating kettle chips and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you change Doritos. It's one thing if you want to make them healthier, which will probably take some of that crisp and crunch and mess away anyway, but you can't keep a Dorito and take the crunch and the mess and the little crumbles on the bottom away from it. Then it's not Doritos.
But if you know, reading the story, I thought it was interesting because, of course, like everything else on Twitter and social media, like, you know, a bunch of niggas jump to wild conclusions without reading the story. So I'm going to go on a little more of what she said in the same interview. She said it's not a male and female thing as much as there are snacks for women that can be designed and packaged differently, kind of to your point, Nye. And yes, we're looking into it. We're trying to get ready to launch a bunch of them soon. For women, low crunch, a full taste profile, not to have so much of the flavor stick to your fingers. And how can you put them in a purse? Because women love the carry snacks in their purse. Yeah, so that's exactly. She's not saying, she was never saying.
I still don't like that. I don't like the idea of women having to eat cute.
But what I'm saying is, like, people, I think I've been reading the social media side of it. People jump to conclusions, and I think people also thought this was a man talking.
Who did this? Yes,
a male CEO.
People did think that. Yes.
So she's, you know, obviously she's not a man, and she was, you know, yeah, I mean, you can like it or not like it, but it, I think people took it as a man bashing women, saying women, right, you know, that, and ran with it without reading the story. I just thought that,
right,
was very interesting.
Well, I mean, I think the messaging was off, right? I think if PepsiCo slash, doesn't Pepsi also own Frito-Lay now or whatever? I think if
they own pretty much everything.
I think if their entire statement was just, we want to make a chip that women can put in their purse that's a little less, that's like a little more crunchless, that's a little whatever, which basically is going to be like a pop chip or something, or air pop something. If that was the statement, that's one thing. But to make it specifically about Doritos, that's I think what was the weird thing, because I don't think there's any woman out there who's like, I would love to eat Doritos if only they weren't. So either you're going to eat Doritos or you're not. Like,
that, but I could see, I mean, the thing about, you know, the, I mean, obviously I'm not a woman, but I could see the part about more, not so much the crunch part, but I could see what she's saying about this stuff getting on her hands. Because women, you know, you have nails and you guys have manicures.
Yeah,
and it's like, I don't want this shit all over my fingers.
But
like,
that's
gonna
not
going to
stop you specifically from eating a bag of Doritos. There's a whole gang of stuff that falls under that category of, I don't want to eat it because of my hands. Like, are they going to make some different buffalo wings? Like, you know what I'm saying? It's just Doritos is game food, snack food, fun food. And that's what it's for. And either you're going to eat it or you ain't. You know what I mean? I just think it's overthinking, like, to make a chip that for women. But like, either you're going to eat a Dorito or you ain't, goddamn. Like,
what you think, bro?
I agree. Like, eat the fucking chip, okay? Lick your fingers. Like, what are we doing
here? All that.
Like, what is research? This is what research and development is doing.
Right.
Like, my nigga, like, well, come on, man.
You don't see the motherfuckers who make hot Cheetos being like, we not going to make hot Cheetos because
that's a part women of the experience. A part of the right. experience of eating Doritos is you get that thick-ass cheese on your fingers.
Yeah.
And have to lick it off.
Orange fingers.
Yeah, lick it off or don't.
Yeah, all right. Well,
let me tell you about me and Doritos. My ass walked through fucking Paris, France by myself with a backpack on the banks of the Seine, eating some damn Doritos and Chips Ahoy. If you want to eat Doritos, you're going to eat.
Doritos
and
Chips Ahoy?
Yes. That was what I had in my bag for provisions.
Provisions.
That was what I had in my bag for provisions. And it was amazing.
And
I will always now associate Doritos with Paris, which I know is crazy, but that was great. It was great. So, mm-hmm. I mean, but honestly for me, but y'all all know I'm a snack bandit. Everybody who listens knows that by now. But when I'm craving Doritos, I specifically want Doritos. I don't want a cleaner, less crunchy chip. I want Cool Ranch Doritos. I want the Cool Ranch seasoning. I want the little bits at the bottom, and I want the crunch. It's part of the experience. I want all of that.
All right. So we didn't get to mention last week, but I wanted to mention Ayanna Jackson, who is the woman who accused Tupac and his cohorts of raping her back in the 90s. She's done a four-part interview with Vlad TV about her side of the experience. First time she's ever spoken about it. Nobody even knew what she looked like. You ever did any press? I don't believe ever previous to this. She's now 44 years old. I didn't say where she lived or anything, but now 44 years old, and she's speaking, you know, her version of what happened. It caused a lot of controversy last week because, of course, Pac has like fans who think he was, you know, basically Jesus.
Yeah, bottom.
Yeah, and you know, anybody who says anything in this Pac is a heathen and a monster.
But is this the one he went to jail for, or this is the
yes.
one where they're charged? Okay.
This is the one he went to jail for. Uh-huh. It was very interesting, you know, to hear her side of the story. She, you know, she definitely felt like at times she was fudging some of the story. And I mean, this also happened about 25 years ago, so
right.
I think some details were also just a little gray. Yeah, and also, but she definitely felt like she fudged a little bit. Some stuff was gray. Sometimes her story was definitely confusing, but it sounded like what happened was, and Brooke, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you watched the pieces too, that she went to the club with some girlfriends. I don't know who told her to come. She kind of insinuated it might have been Haitian Jack, but I don't know. Went to the club. Met Tupac at the club. He came, you know, behind us, started dancing with it. We started dancing. You know, she kind of like, I guess at some point, he put his dick out on the dance floor. She kind of went down. You went down and kind of like, you know, maybe like
touched. Maybe gave him head on the dance floor.
Well, she said,
yeah, she said she didn't give full on head.
Yeah, that's she said she just she said I kissed it and then I came right back up.
Came right back up. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that felt fudgy. Like, you know, she probably did. She was 19. She's still very attractive
she
now.
She was 19 and it's Tupac.
And I could imagine, again, she was very attractive now. I can imagine how bad she was back then. So she was a hot chick ready to get it popping. So then she said they went to the hotel. She said they had sex three times in that night. And she left. She said that was the thing that I never knew that. She said the thing when the, you know, the I guess I should use air quotes, the alleged rape happened, it wasn't that night. She said that she went to see him multiple times in that week because he was in town filming Above the Rim.
Well, that's where it gets a little...
That's where it got a little fudgy. Yeah.
That's where it got very fudgy because it felt like... And again, I want to make it very clear that I believe what she said, what occurred to her, but it definitely felt like she had created a relationship
in her head
when it was just fucking.
Because she always said she had to go through his road manager.
Yeah, Charles up against last name. Butler or something. Charles something, yeah. So she said that.
Wasn't the whole issue that not about him, but that he set her out to his boys?
Yeah. So she said that this is what she said when it got fuzzy. She said the first night they got busy three times. Then we had a car come pick her up. She went to work. He went to the thing. He called her late on that day. Yo, come back down in a time or two. She came back down. Those few nights they just hung out and didn't have sex, which I was like, word? Okay, that's kind of, okay.
They, according to her, they took long walks in the park.
Yeah, they were just hanging out. Yeah, I don't believe that either. And then, so one night she said that she came down there. You know, they went into the room. His boys was in. It was a suite, so he had the living room. They was hanging out. She went into the room with him. They started to have sex, and all of a sudden she said she heard somebody come in the room, and his boys was all basically like standing there, like pulling their shit out, like let's get this cracking.
Wow.
And she said that he kind of held her head. Like, yo, do this for my boys, do this for me kind of thing. And then it got really fuzzy because it sounded almost like this is the vibe I got. The vibe I got is that she definitely like had, you know, developed this relationship in her head, like Brussels, like she was almost like in love with the guy. And I think she said she fucked him while they was all standing there. And then I think she was like, okay, he wants me to do this. This is what I think. I think she probably did fuck the next guy and maybe even the next guy. But I think by that time she was like, okay, I don't want to do this no more.
Mm-hmm.
And it was two or three other niggas still waiting. And that's when it obviously got super out of hand. And that's when she turned into the whole, how could you do this to me? And blah, 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 blah.
Right. Or maybe she thought she was going to be down. And then just in the middle of even the very next guy, she was like, no, I don't want to. Or maybe she did say, no, I don't want to. Because, you know, it's a different thing.
Maybe.
You know, and I mean, I think also part of what might have been a little fuzzy for her is that, you know, when you're recounting any kind of sexual assault, it's embarrassing even for you. You know what I mean? Regardless of what it was.
Even now, it's 25 years ago.
Yeah, because people are going to keep asking you, like serious details, and it's embarrassing, I think, to even acknowledge that you were in a position to be there. You know what I mean? Like, it's an embarrassing story to tell.
And to chime in on that point, which I think is very valid, first of all, Vlad was conducting this interview.
Yes.
You got the sense immediately that this was going to be an I got you moment. He was looking for an I got you moment. And this is a woman who clearly who has told the story before. I don't think she's been secretive. I don't think she does press, but it doesn't seem, she did not seem uncomfortable with telling the story, but she felt very guarded and she was very particular about what she was saying. She was very clear about what she was saying. You can see she would sort of wait a second to answer, to make sure she said the right things.
Right.
And you got the sense that she's been down this, people are looking for, and I got you. I cannot imagine the level of shit that she had to endure when this was taking place, because when I see these dick riding niggas out here now going in on this woman and acting like Pac was this fucking, you know, this saint and this, like, this guy who would never have done that, and he would never, like, nigga, you don't know him.
Yeah.
That's your man's. Right.
And also, yeah, clearly he got convicted and did time for this. And if people really knew the stats of how many rape cases actually get reported, how many out of what are reported actually go to trial, how many out of what goes to trial actually get convicted, the chances of him actually getting wrongly convicted, pretty slim.
Yeah, pretty slim. And the other thing, man, that was, I'll say this. I felt for her. I believed everything that she said took place. I do kind of agree with Jeff. I think she was teetering on, should I do this? Maybe this was, and you know, listen, this is a young woman. Maybe she had, you know, fantasies. Maybe she felt pressured.
Right.
Who knows?
Kind of like the Aziz story. Like, she didn't, yes, she didn't want to piss him off. She didn't want to, she didn't want to do all that, but she didn't want to piss him off. She wanted him to still like her. She didn't really maybe know how to articulate.
It didn't know how to exit.
No, initially.
Exactly.
Yeah,
didn't know how to exit. And like you said, Jeff, I think things got out of hand really quickly, really fast, and it was really wild. And I think she was just sort of stuck. And, you know, like some women have said, that, you know, you're almost paralyzed. You know what I'm saying? You can't really move. You don't really know what to do. And I believe her, man. Like, I believe her. Her story.
Yeah, and if dudes,
and
if
that shit becomes like, you know, could it become like almost like a freeding frenzy? Like, niggas just say, like, yo, hold on, niggas, my turn, nigga, put my shit out there.
Might have been trying to gangbang, because it's like, if a dude, I have to imagine, if a dude like Pac has his boys out and he's like, yo, this girl is for the taking, y'all literally think that means any fucking thing goes.
Yes,
so,
yeah.
Who the hell knows what they were trying to do?
Yeah, it wasn't like I doubt they were very treating her very gentle, you know? Right. And then she said that afterwards, the bodyguard guy, the road manager guy, he didn't fuck. And he was kind of like, you know, okay, let's get it together. So they try to get you home. And she kind of insinuated that he felt pretty bad about what happened. And when he walked her out to see Pac, Pac was basically like, yo, get this bitch out the room. And she was
now,
like, damn, nigga, like.
Now, here's a very interesting thing that occurred in the interview, and I don't know if you caught it, but she said she got to the elevator. And she said, when she got to the elevator, that she saw two people. Mm-hmm. These two people asked her, was she okay? Then they specifically, according to her, they specifically asked her, did she come from this room?
Yeah, room, whatever they was in.
And she said, yes. And these just so happened to be hotel security guards. So right at the time that you're leaving this room, hotel security happens to be on the elevator. They happen to know exactly what room you were coming from. You know what I'm saying? Like, it felt really weird. And I think that like you said, Jeff, it's been 25 years. And I think people deal with traumatic experiences very differently.
Absolutely.
And it would not surprise me at all if she had made what she thought was a relationship up in her head to feel better.
To kind of compensate.
To compensate. You got the sense that she was trying her damnedest to not paint him as an awful person.
Yeah.
But kept describing actions of
that's
an awful,
awful
person.
Yeah, awful
know?
Nigga. Right. Yeah.
Also, she didn't, you know, at 19... When you're a jump, you don't necessarily want to think you're a jump, right? So
yes.
If you're a 19-year-old, Tupac is in town, he's shooting, you know, above the rim, and he's asking you to come to his room continuously, you may not even be paying attention to that. He's just asking you to come to the hotel room to fuck. All you're thinking is Tupac wants to see me again.
Wants to hang out with me again, yeah.
And wants to hang out with me again, and he asked to see me again. And, ooh, girl, no, I'm going back. He asked me to go back and whatever, whatever. So I think there's also just, like, what I think it also may have been is, like, it's the end of the week. Pac's tired of her. And so the way of kind of getting rid of her was setting her out, which is terrible, you know, but not outside of the realm of belief for me at all.
Yeah, because, again, Pac wasn't a fucking angel. You know what I'm saying? It's obvious. So he was, nobody's perfect, and he definitely wasn't. So kind of, you know, that opened up a whole different can of worms. Everybody just acting like, how dare you say anything bad about him? Was like, come on, man. Like,
you know, I mean, you can listen to some of Pac's lyrics and tell that was what it was.
Shit. Exactly, exactly. So I just wanted to mention that because we didn't get to mention it last week. Also, let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl in general. Did you watch the game?
Did you watch it?
Okay, yeah. So
Greg is a diehard Eagles fan. I had to watch it.
Oh, he's a Eagles fan? Most Long Island dudes is Jets fans.
No, he's a diehard Eagles fan to the point where he wouldn't even let anybody watch the game with him. His phone was on silent. He was sitting in the, like, I wasn't allowed to watch the game with him.
He was like, you're going to jinx it.
He was sitting in, well, also because he gets so crazy. He was sitting in the, because every Eagles fan, like, they finally gone to the Super Bowl for the first time in who knows how long, but he said he was sitting in the middle. 15 years? Yeah, he said he was sitting in the middle of it and have never won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. They said he was sitting in the middle of the couch, like, just focused. Like, I'm here, my food is here, this is over here, and, like, that's it. Like, I'm not talking to nobody.
Leave me alone.
I'm not answering the phone, I'm not texting, I'm not looking at Twitter, like, nothing.
Yeah, so the game was awesome.
It was a great game.
Great game. Back and forth, no defense. all offense. And, you know, Philly beat New England. A lot of people wanted to see New England go down. Philly definitely took, to me, they took a lot of, they learned from Jacksonville this year and Atlanta last year on what not to do. Atlanta and Jacksonville both had leads on New England. And from that point on, both teams played not to lose. They were just trying to, like, we'll just try to keep them off the field. Let's try to slow it down. They went away from the game plan that got them, you know, got those leads. They were just trying to do anything they could do to just kind of hold on and both end up losing. Philly never took their foot off the gas. They just, like, the whole game they had, they was like, you scoring, we scoring. You scoring, we scoring. Like, it's like, it was never, there were no punts in the game. Like, there were no punts. Like, Doug Peterson went for it was on one. Every fourth down.
It was one punt in the game.
It was one?
Yeah.
Okay, one punt. Yeah, so game was amazing, though. Philly went crazy. There's all kind of clips on TV. Peace to Kelly, who was on the Twitter talking reckless. Like, she actually still is.
She's going to be. Listen, all Eagle fans are going to be. And you know what, though? Philly has a right. Like, I actually was loving watching every Eagles fan's reaction all night. Like, I don't know. Did you guys see the clips of Kobe?
Yeah, in the crib.
So, like, Kobe, first clips earlier in the night where he's trying to watch the game and his daughter is trying to get him to read her a story. He's like, are you serious right now? Yeah, he's like, look, baby, the Eagles. And then he's holding the baby during that last play when the Patriots tried to score and didn't. And he's like, oh, my God. We won the fucking Super Bowl, but he had the baby in his hand. So he's like trying not, like, you could tell he wanted to throw her ass in the air.
Yeah,
like, do something. Like, he's trying to contain it. Yeah, he's trying to contain himself and not even scream too loud because he's holding the baby. But that was great. Kevin Hart was acting a fool on national TV.
Kevin Hart was drunk as a skunk.
Drunk as hell. But, like, every Philly fan, Will Smith wilding out, you know.
Yeah.
Like, but they deserve, like, they really genuinely deserve that.
Yeah, they do. And I can't wait. I guess the parade is going to be
tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow? Is Greg going?
I told him he should go, but it's his son's last basketball game of the season, I think.
Oh, damn.
I just want to know
who they're going to have there. I wonder if Kobe's flying in. I think Will's in Australia filming, but I wonder if Kobe's coming, Iverson, like all the Philly kind of luminaries, Dr. J, and, you know. It was a great game. I enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, and I mean, I also want to give a shout out to not that he will ever hear this shout out, but Chris Clancy, who is our futures manager.
Are you from Philly?
He's from Philly. And Chris, from the moment I started working with OF, what I knew about Chris is that Chris will schedule his flight, his travel, his everything to make sure that he never misses a Philly game on TV. He watches every single game, and he was in Minnesota, and his wife posted a clip of him. No, he posted the clip after when it was clear that they won. And I mean, just screaming, beating shit, tears in his eyes. Like there were so many grown men crying over this win because it was just so unbelievable. It was amazing. Yeah. I just loved watching it.
It was incredible. What did you think about the game, bro?
I thought it was excellent, man. I went down and I watched it at my boy's house.
Yeah, about to ask you, where'd you watch it?
I go down the street, man. You know,
go to the cigar shop.
Nah, cigar shop is great for like the games on Sunday. Because I don't have the football package, so I watch my Saints when I go to the cigar shop. But the Super Bowl, it's on regular TV. You know, I don't want to be in there with, 15, 20 cigars.
Yeah.
It gets overwhelming. But my boy, he has a cigar room in the house. So if I want we can smoke in the house. But yeah, we did, and it was just great. We had a great time, talk shit. You know, coaching, being old black niggas and watching the game. Oh, nigga, he can't pick up the block, nigga. That's, talking shit like we
got to pick up the blitz, nigga. Damn.
Damn. Like, we ain't coaching. Nobody coached a damn football ever.
They ain't a cover too.
Yeah. Nigga, what? but yeah, it was great, man. I loved it. I was glad that, the Patriots lost. I was glad that Tom Brady didn't get to enjoy another Super Bowl.
That was the other thing. I think just like there were so many people who were rooting against the Patriots, not necessarily for the Eagles.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Exactly. It looked like, there are definitely our Philly fans, and more people just wanted the Patriots to lose. It was like enough, So let's talk about halftime.
Yep.
So Justin Timberlake came out halftime and did the halftime performance, somewhat controversial performance since the Janet Jackson fiasco happened. I don't know, was that 10 years ago or so?
I think more. Is it more?
It might be more.
Wasn't that like 2005 or something like that?
2004.
So 14 years ago. People was waiting to hate. He was in the crosshairs before he even hit the stage. It was mad about Janet. There was a Janet Jackson appreciation, day on Twitter that ended up trending number one, which was crazy.
Yep. I did participate in that.
Janet is amazing. You know what I'm saying? Everybody was, tweeting pictures and videos of Janet and da da da. And then Justin, there was also controversy because Justin decided to include a Prince tribute in his show. And people were mad about that. Felt like, how dare he? He had some words back and forth with Prince at one point.
Let's back up a little bit. So there was first the Janet anger, right? Like, Justin being invited back to the Super Bowl, and that was the first time Justin was doing a Super Bowl since the whole Janet situation. And then it was conflated with the fact that people were pissed. On top of that Justin was doing the Super Bowl in Minneapolis because, Prince ain't really rock with him too tough. And because of Janet's affiliation with Minneapolis, right?
Yep.
So, and then a rumor came out like the day or two before the game that Justin was going to do a Prince hologram. And that really pissed people off because Prince has stated in interviews that he didn't believe in any kind of posthumous duets or performances or anything. He actually called it demonic. So people were like, that would go against Prince's wishes. And that's what people were still bothered by with the tribute, even though it wasn't a hologram, it was a projection. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Justin fashioned it as a true duet between them, even though Prince's sister approved it, people have been side-eyeing Prince's sister since she was appointed head of state.
Let me jump in real quick. She didn't approve that.
She didn't.
There was an article in the Wall Street Journal today that specified no one has complete control of Prince's estate.
She's not the sole executor.
At all. Mm. At this point, there's a small bank that is based in Dallas that is the executor of his estate. They consult with his sister, and I think there were like five other half-siblings. Those are the people that they consult because those are the people who the court said have the rights to the estate.
So not her.
Not her. They have...
That's interesting.
Well, apparently this is not uncommon when there is no will. So basically, this particular bank has put... That's who assigned Troy Carter in being basically a point person to help navigate these spaces. Now, I don't know what the fees were. I don't know what the financial situation is. They didn't break that down. But it sounded, from the sound of the article, that this was a decision made by a bank that is trying to figure out the best way to monetize. They're trying to figure out how to monetize the estate to keep it afloat and to, you know, sort of maximize it, right? Like, they don't have they don't have a relationship with Prince. Like, this is not, at this point, I think we've all sort of felt a little way initially that, you know, Prince's folks that were sort of in his inner circle were not adhering to his wishes. And so what this was that this was another point of them just not adhering to his wishes. Now, I thought the performance was good. I said not great.
I was underwhelmed by the whole thing.
I thought it was good. I gave it a Fred G. Sanford. You know, it was all right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't the worst thing in the world. You know, I think, like you said, Justin was already.
I didn't
in
think
the
it
process.
Was a Super Bowl performance.
Well, I thought it. To me, he was doing too much. Okay, it was just a lot going on. You're moving around. The sound was weird at certain points, in certain pockets. You're in the stands with some kid that don't know who the fuck you are.
Yeah,
like it was just weird.
It was
like,
a lot happening.
It was a lot happening, and I get that he. It was probably a lot happening because he had to do that show alone. Because I'm sure
right. And I wonder why.
Well, I don't wonder why, because niggas ain't fucking with the Super Bowl. Like, niggas ain't fucking with the Super Bowl like that. And you got to get those approvals. You have to go through certain things.
Got some other white people. But nobody does Super Bowl. To your point, nobody does Super Bowl halftime alone. Like, Gaga did it. But before Gaga, I can't remember the last person who did Super Bowl halftime alone.
It's probably like some shit from like 98, like Cher, some shit like that with Do You Believe.
Like shit, it took Coldplay and Beyonce and Bruno to do their year. You know, that was all three of them. Yeah.
So I say all that to say there's basically a small bank. Like, it's not like this is Citibank or, you know, Chase or these are not like big national brands. This isn't Goldman Sachs. This isn't a money house. This is like literally, this is probably a dude making this decision who just paid off his student loans 6 years ago. And he's sending tuition payments to a vocational school for his kids, right? Like, this is a mid-level bank. This is not a big to do. So.
And the moral there is. Please leave a will.
And also, I think that, you know, this is what you're going to see. And again, from reading the article, this is just my assessment. What you're going to see is you're going to see more of this. You're going to see more of things that we know that he has, you know, said he didn't like, things that he wouldn't have normally done, things he wouldn't have normally approved, are going to be approved. And you know why? Because guess what? When fucking Uncle Sam comes and he's banging on your door for them estate taxes and them death benefits, and they saying, yo, you got to pay, like, somebody got to pay.
Yeah.
Somebody got to pay. And his brothers and sisters, God bless them, they, you know, these folks probably work regular jobs. They 4 to 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't famous people. They don't know this shit. So
they don't know nothing. Yeah, they working for the $12 plan.
That's what I'm saying.
So you got lawyers calling your phone, like, what the hell?
And so I don't necessarily, I think because Troy is a higher up at Spotify that they felt like, you know, and has management experience on a big scale, having had Gaga, that this was probably a good idea for them to go. And maybe they have a relationship with Spotify. I don't know. They didn't really specify that in the article, but it was basically telling you and breaking down how that was approved. They don't have the approval. They don't have the ability to swing a hammer and say yay or nay on whether or not his image goes up or down.
So what is it, like, the bank is basically just making these deals and then the putting money in escrow?
Yes, the bank is, that's probably what's happening. The bank is probably dealing with, like, to me, okay, like basic shit. Who's paying the maintenance on his home? Like, that home is operating as a museum, right? Like, who's paying the, literally, who pays the light bill? Who does the light bill go to?
Right.
Like, very basic shit that people don't necessarily think about still have to happen, and it still has to occur. I don't know what his company status was. What happens to those people? Are they just fired? Is the staff still on? Who's paying workman's comp? Is there health insurance? Is it, like, all of these things are things that the banks have to sort out. It's not an easy thing to sort out. Even for a person of his caliber, it would probably take a year to really dive into a proper will. Like, to get them to, like, sit down, really map out all of the assets, where, you know, what goes where, who gets in charge with what. And again, this is not uncommon. I don't know how this bank particularly got this. I don't know if they were appointed by a judge. They may have been appointed by a judge. I'm not sure. It didn't specify that. But this can give what we saw is probably going to happen a lot more.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was, I didn't know all that. That's very interesting. But when a state of that size, it makes sense that it would just kind of be some turmoil. It's so much money, you know, it's publishing, there's properties, there's all kinds of shit going on.
And he has the issue right now is that he has so much music stocked away.
That's unbelievable. Yeah.
What do you do with that music? And was it ready to go? And who is now the curator of that music? You know, but
that's the issue, right? For Prince was an artist who was such a perfectionist, and like even the casual Prince fan knows how protective he was, obviously, of his rights, of his image, of all of those things. Like just the very fact that, you know, for years you can barely find a Prince clip on YouTube. I think, you know, part of what you're getting with Justin is, okay, even if they went through the proper channels, whatever they were, to get approval, it takes very little knowledge of Prince to know that he wasn't really with that. So like you could have done a tribute to him, but it didn't have to be
this
that.
What it reeked of privileged white man. It reeked of a white man who has decided that he is going to do what he wants to do. Whatever your wishes be damned. And that's what angered people. That's what I text you guys. I was like, I like this shit, but the Prince thing, no, it's no go for me. And what really bothered me, and what really bothered me the most about this was that they really hinged this on a technicality, right? Because Prince said he didn't want a hologram. So technically it's not a hologram. We know what he meant.
We know
what he meant. And for an artist to do that, because I consider Justin an artist. I didn't think of Justin as just like a singer, as a person who didn't really have creative influence and input.
He's an artist.
So for an artist, aside from anything else, for an artist to be that tone deaf, for a white man who, you know, you sweet soul, like for that guy to be so tone deaf of what that even projected and what it looked like, when he could have done a tribute, they could have played an instrumental, there were multiple ways to acknowledge Prince in Minneapolis without putting him on that screen.
Yeah.
And mashing up your song with it.
So I like that part, actually.
And somebody else
I like that part. That shit was fly to me.
Somebody else pointed out to me that he opened his set with the same song that him.
Oh, yeah, Rock with you. So who won, Janet or Justin?
Janet.
Won Sunday.
Janet.
She won.
Janet won.
Janet won. But let me say this again, okay? We're not going to make her a martyr. We're not going to do this. She knew the titty was coming out, my nigga. And I'm sick.
She didn't know.
I'm sick of everybody at... It was...
I think she knew.
I'm going to be quiet.
Disconsiderate. I've said this before. Disconsiderate.
She said she ain't know.
Considering where Janet was at that point in her career and what she was about and what she got off on, and I mean this as an artist, not as the person, like she's pushing the envelope. I don't think she expected it to go that far. I don't think she expected the backlash to be that bad. But what did happen is when the heat came, Janet refused to apologize. Justin did apologize. So Justin still got to go to the Grammys and Janet didn't get to go to the Grammys and, you know, whatever.
I think.
But people consider that him having thrown her under the bus.
And I will absolutely acknowledge that she was vilified and it was unnecessary and unfair and it was unjust, right? I'm not saying that. We all know that that's what happened. You know what I'm saying? But like listen. If Janet Jackson said she didn't know, I'm going to leave it at that. Sean Young is going to leave on that note about the titty that was exposed. If she says she didn't know, that's that. I'm going to keep quiet.
He said she ain't know.
I got love and respect for Janet, and I'm going to leave it at that. I ain't going to. If she says she didn't know, who are me? Who are me to judge?
To judge. You know. Yeah, I think Janet won too. I mean, Justin's album is not doing well. You know, the Super Bowl, I mean, it was a dog pile as far as the Super Bowl thing goes. Like I said, I didn't think it was, you know, the best shit ever, but I didn't think it was the most terrible shit either. You know what I'm saying? He was just the convenient person, you know, at the time. And of course, it's social also, media.
And it's not just that. Again, like, dude, like, you have, listen, the reality is you have made your career, your solo career, Justin, has been entrenched in black music and in black culture. And
shit, his NSYNC career, because he was the soulful white boy in NSYNC.
And for
in the Mickey Mouse Club, he was singing Jealousy.
And to me, for there to be no acknowledgement of Cap or just any sort of... It just felt like, yo, I got the Super Bowl and I'm out. I don't know what to tell you niggas.
Yeah.
It felt like, what you want me to do? Yeah.
And what was funny to me, actually on an extra tip, was that he released a limited edition Jordan that same night.
Well, that wasn't his Jordan, actually. That was a Jordan, but he was the first one to wear them. Nike thought they was going to be slick and try to... You know, do a cross branded thing with him, but the Nike fucked up. They put the shits out. Nobody knew. You don't put out a Jordan during the Super Bowl because everybody's watching the game.
Right.
Nobody knows they're out. Of course, a bunch of
bots. No, but I heard the resale value by Monday was crazy.
Yeah, it was because a bunch of bots and the flim flammers, they got the alerts.
They got them right.
Yeah, but the regular people who would have, you know, signed up for them, we watching the game. It's like, what? They came out. So, yeah, that was some bullshit. So, I don't know. I think that's it. Wrap up on that.
I mean, I still haven't listened to Man in the Woods, but
it's not great. It's not as bad as people say. There's some moments on there.
I don't know. I mean, I got to listen to it before I judge, but somebody told me that, well, it's two things. First of all, like Sean was saying, Justin based his solo career on like black people and a black sound, but not just that, like Justin's entire career, like has been based on NSYNC being kind of soulful and having a little flavor, like, even in the Mickey Mouse Club, like him and fucking Ryan Gosling singing Cry For You and shit, you know, like with silk shirts on and a wind and a fan. So the fact that now at this stage in your career, when that's what got you this far, all of a sudden you're doing like a let me acknowledge that I'm from Tennessee type album. But you're still using the same producers you've always used.
Yeah, that's what didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I heard
the
Chris
album doesn't
Stapleton.
Have nothing to do with Man in the Woods. It's like it sounds like normal Pharrell Neptune's production. It was like this ain't no Man in the Woods. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, I heard Chris Stapleton offered to do the album with him, and he declined.
Chris is on one song. He's on one song.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just it feels like he's going through a little bit of identity crisis, but it's definitely not having the reaction I guess he assumed it was going to have.
It's definitely not. It's definitely like not. It's not doing well at all. So God bless him, you know. That's it, man. We're going to wrap it up on that note. Anything else anybody need to say?
Nah.
I don't know when we're going to tape next week, but Valentine's Day is on Wednesday, so I hope y'all got your shit together for the Valentine's in your lives.
For the V-Day.
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's.
Yeah, peace Valentine's Day.
Peace to Jackie. Yeah. I just want to say peace to Jackie Jackson, by the way, who I think is a 65 or 66 years old.
Yeah.
And just had 2-month-old twins. We just had twins.
Look, man. I've seen Jackie, man. Jackie definitely will scoop up your auntie.
Jackie's still in great shape. He still look good.
Nigga. Let Aunt Cheryl go to that concert if you want to. Uncle Craig gonna be crying at home.
That is funny.
While Jackie Jackson blowing her back out in the dressing room.
Balls deep.
Oh, we also gotta say rest in peace to oh my gosh. Why am I blanking?
Dennis Edwards.
To Dennis Edwards, right. Yeah. Who passed away on Saturday, I think.
Yeah, like a day before his 75th birthday. Dennis was like, I mean, those vocals are just incredible, especially that sort of psychedelic soul he did with the Temptations.
Yeah, like Cloud Nine and
it was really, really amazing. And
and all that.
Yeah.
And Sean said that Eddie and David and Dennis are now in heaven talking shit about Otis.
Oh yeah, they definitely talk shit about Otis. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause he ended up being the last one left.
Yeah.
The last one.
Down there thinking he a damn Temptation.
And blew up there like, y'all ain't got to talk about Otis like that.
Exactly. He off in the corner.
He was all right with me, shit.
He was all right. He was just trying to do what he felt was right for the group.
You know what I'm saying? So we're going to wrap it up on that note, and we'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @Pop Life Podcast. Talk to you next week.